The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, April the 24th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with the Apollo Rocket, Ed Lynch Jr., and the always colorful and unpredictable Super Rick Egon. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway, by Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. And Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa, is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Hi, this is Amy Ott, and you're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We bring in one of the all-time greats from Western Pennsylvania, second-generation driver. They call him the Apollo Rocket, Ed Lynch Jr., taking time out of his busy schedule with construction work to join us here on the Sprint Car Show. Ed, always a pleasure to speak with you. Welcome to the show.
Hello, and it's good to talk with you.
Well, your mom and I had a great conversation the other day. Of course, your mom, Jeannie Lynch, well-known throughout all of the racing circles from the northeast part of the country down to Florida and out to Indianapolis. I didn't know that she was a scorer out at Indy back in the day.
Yes, Indianapolis also had serial scorers, and they had turn scorers and stuff like that. So she did it a lot of years, and she even got my sister involved with it a few years. But anything racing, my mother loved to be a part of, and still does, and that's what keeps her going.
Your father, Edlin Sr., was a tremendous driver, sprint cars and modifieds. You followed in his path, but you're also very big and a very long time member in the construction world. How were you able throughout all the years to be able to balance the business and work in construction and still be a very competitive sprint car racer?
Well, it was tough, a lot of long hours, a lot of, in the Lynch racing camp, you have to pretty much work on your own stuff and try to make, my dad always told me, he says, you can't make a crash race car go faster. He always wanted you to, there was a hole open, you'd be in it. If you race, you race it, but if not, there's another day to make it work. So we would try to take care of our equipment and that was our motto, and we would try not to buy the fattest stuff. We'd only buy things that would make speed and, capitalize on that. And in construction, in high school, college, I played football, did track, so I was always competitive. My father was very competitive, his whole life, in racing, and I always took pride of being physically fit and athletic, and that way you had a sharp mind and a sharp body. And so in construction, it worked well as being competitive and always finding a better way, a more efficient way, a safer way of doing projects. So some of the projects that I would do, I would excel in a lot more than I got a nomination of one of the recognized 33 in the world, recognized for a world record concrete pour that I designed and did. And, you know, I did a few other one-of-a-kind projects. So I earned my mark in construction just by, I built the earthquake foundation, earthquake attenuator foundation for the Venetian. I did in Las Vegas. I did, you know, a lot of one-of-a-kind projects that other people, you know, they write about now and press a button and try to find out how to do it rather than innovate and do it with the competitive mind that you always had with racing, with sports, and just combined everything together. And the people I worked for made them a lot of money, and they appreciated it. So when I said I wanted to go race, they said, have at it.
That's pretty interesting. I think that sums up a lot of the talent that's coming up through racing today, and it's not a derogatory comment, but I see a lot. I have heard from drivers. People want to be handed the silver platter. They just want to jump in the car and go race, and it's a rarity that you see people, as you were saying, you had to work on the car yourself back in the day. And as we were talking about before we came on the air, there was a stretch there for a couple of years where you folks way out there in western Pennsylvania came halfway across the state to run at Sealands Grove. You know, that's a good four and a half, 5 hour tow, and then go race on Sunday night. With these younger kids that are coming up, do you see less and less kids working on the cars themselves, or is it a mixture?
No, I do see less and less. I have two boys, one 22 and one 14, that would love to drive. One has driven one race. They both want to drive it someday at some form. But I demand that they work in the garage, because I think you're a smarter racer when you can work on the cars and know the function of the cars, know when a wheel is coming loose, know when a car is tight or loose, or know when an engine is falling down or not. And know how to fix it, then you become a better racer. But in this day and age, what we have, nobody has any time anymore. Everybody wants to get there faster. Everybody wants to do their little jump and move up to the next level and do all this. And, you know, it is the way society is today, and I don't blame them for doing that. But as far as being a better driver for it, it's not showing up as much, because you have cookie-cutter cars and cookie-cutter classes anymore, where they just put different decals on the cars and they're all the same. They're making the rules so that they're all the same. So it's not showing up as much as a innovative Carl Kinzer comes and does something, or a Bobby Allen comes and does something, or you know, the speed information is out on the internet the same night that the guy wins the race.
Yeah, that's very true. You talked about working in the garages, and you hear so much from so many racers that's where races and championships are won. So what was the early days like for you working in the garage, working with your father on the modifieds and sprint cars, and how do you think that helped you prepare to go out and what you've accomplished, including the all-time winning a sprint car driver at the Lernerville Speedway?
Well, you know, my father has won many, many races in championships and modifieds and sprint cars, and I have won, I think, 286 or 287 A mains in sprint cars, and worked full-time jobs at construction. So, you know, it's an accomplishment what we have done, and I'm, you know, very proud of what we've done. But what out of that, you know, it's like there's two different kinds of mechanics. There's parts changers, or there's mechanics that can fix what you have. And there's you see those out there on the circuit and in the garages and stuff like that, guys that can only change parts, you know, put brand new stuff on, you know, stuff like that, where other guys can, you know, lots of times I've had to take a frame that you laid down on the creeper in the floor and you looked underneath, that thing was like in an S. And, you know, you repaired and fixed it. A lot of times we have a place down there by the garage where I have three maple trees that are strategically placed in an area. When I have a bent frame or the front end is all the way over to the right, maybe 8 inches or something like that, I use come-alongs and chains and chain faults and bring it back, you know, right in. You have the soft wood of the trees, and it brings it back in, and you go race the car, and you put it on the scale, and you figure it out, and you go race the car. I mean, if you want to race, that's what you got to do, and you know, it's just not roll out another one all the time, you know. But it's also changed over the years where you were able to do that with cars a lot, where now the tubing's a lot thinner and different quality of steel that's out there now. So I agree, there's a lot of changes in the sport, a lot of good changes. I believe the sport's still safe. We have a lot safer seats, you know, things like that. But as far as, you know, the weight limit's the same, the wings are the same, the tires are the same, if you just keep going like that, so we end up, like I call it, cookie cutter cars. So anybody just jumps on it and jumps in it and stands on the gas and rides around the cushion, I don't call that a driver. I don't call that, a mechanic to make the car work. You have a car that'll go anywhere on the racetrack, drive inside, outside, what dirt track racing's all about. That's more an accomplishment and what dirt was all about compared to follow the leader racing.
We're talking with Ed Lynch Jr., one of the all-time great sprint car drivers out of the western part of the state of Pennsylvania. I want to get back to that comment there, Ed, in just a second, but I do have to ask you on safety. You and I were talking beforehand. You were telling me a very interesting story about qualifying at Sealands Grove some years ago. Why don't you go ahead and relay that story to our listeners?
A long time ago, I think it was the last time I was at Sealands Grove, things were getting kind of run down. The track was always fast. Sometimes during the features, I remember with the old lights and everything, the back straightaway would have the river fog come over on it, and you'd be coming out of two and going out of back, you couldn't see three. But it wasn't dust, it was fog. But one time I went there for time trials and went into three and a rock about the size of the guardrails were rotting off the bottom, and the rock about the size of a helmet came out and just tore the frame completely off. So I had to repair that, and then they had to run the that was back close to when they were running the 50,000 to win race they had there. The track was always fast, always demanding, you had a spec tire you had to run, so we didn't run spec tires, so we went there, we buy one off the parts truck, and it's all dry rotted and everything, go out there and blew the tire and tore the wing off, you know, and we're like, well, I guess we're not supposed to race here anymore. So it was a long tow back then, a lot of two-lane roads, where now they got a lot more four-lane to get there, probably cut off an hour of time, and the track surface, I hear, is a lot better, and I hear the racing's good, and the facilities are fixed up, so maybe I ought to give it a shot again.
And the lighting has improved. Now, they've added some new taller light poles and dispersed lighting out over the entire track, so it's a much much better lit track. But, yes, there are still times when that river fog does roll in, and there is nothing you can do about it. Speaking of drivers, what are your thoughts on today's younger generation that's coming in? Are they more ruthless? And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but are they more ruthless in terms of going after a hole, if it is there or isn't there, compared to back in your guys' heydays when you had guys like Frankie Kerr and Jack Hewitt and Dave Blaney and Steve Kinzer, yourself, when you guys were running? What do you think the mindset is of today's racer compared to what you guys used to be back in the heyday?
That's funny. I just saw Frankie Kerr today. I'm down at in Charlotte, and Mooresville, and I just saw him today. It's funny you'd mention it. But yes, all of us, we earned our way of coming here. We knew when that hole would work and not work, and sometimes when you tried to force your way and it didn't work, you'd be a little sore the next day. You'd be a little black and blue the next day. You might even be broken bones the next day. But you learn from it, and you did all this. Nowadays, you have the seats that are, I mean, I couldn't tell you when a 140-pound guy, you know, a younger driver, whatever, with him crashing and being hurt from the crash, you know, maybe a freak accident or something, or a fire, or maybe a concussion, but the rest of it, the drivers aren't even sore. They're not even black and blue, so they just jump in another car and they go. And you know, and you see them get out of the car. They don't even work on it to get it back in shape or to roll out the other car. They just get their helmet ready again and go again. So it's not like I said, it's a sign of the times. A lot of guys are buying their rides. A lot of guys are, you know, it's just a different mindset where before, you know, you came from, you know, a guy just told me last week, he said, you know, you guys in sprint cars, you always wanted wider seat belts, wider shoulder belts, wider belts, because it was breaking your collarbones. Well, now the seats have gotten so much better and all that they keep you in there, that now the shoulder straps are actually going narrower now. The new shoulder straps they just bought from Simpson are narrower than they were 2 years ago. You know, so safety has gotten better, has kept us intact so that we can talk like this and not lose as many friends and things like that. But I think the racing, you know, on the big shows that I've elected to just do now instead of the local shows, on the big show level, I think you still have good racing and you still have everything else. On the local level, I see a lot of rim riding around the cushion, and that's it. And in my area and the ones I've been to, that's not really racing, dirt racing. So I think the younger guys coming along, they have to deal with what they have. And if there is a cushion, yeah, you have to get there to it and wait for lap traffic or whatever. But I think it needs to change a little so that we can keep the fans. You know, somebody told me the other day, I think it was at the World Racing Group office, and they said the average fan is 41 years old. And then they told me in NASCAR it's actually older. So I said, well, that doesn't make me happy. You know, there is a lot of things to do in this day and age that you can choose on the entertainment you want to go to. And we have to keep remembering we are entertaining and bring in that younger people, whether they want to be drivers, mechanics, owners, whatever they want to do, be involved with the racing, just to keep that going for the next generation. Or it'll be like you and I talked about before show, be like Silver Crown or Champ Cars or things like that. You know, we don't want it to fade away.
And I was just going to talk about that as we're talking with Ed Lynch Jr. from Apollo, Pennsylvania, but Ed coming to us tonight from Charlotte, North Carolina, where he's down there doing some work in the construction business. You had a chance to race against Jeff Gordon back in the day in the Silver Crowns. And did you see something special back when you were racing against him many years ago?
Oh, he was, yeah, he was something. And he was always been the same to me. It's just like Casey Kane and Tony Stewart and Dave Blaney and all those guys. You know, even though they moved up and they got into that, they never, you know, for me, they never changed. They were always the same. Jeff, he was, you know, in my opinion, he was super great midget driver. And in a wing car, he wasn't so well. But in the champ car, it didn't look like he was as comfortable with that big 75-gallon tank on the back. But a funny story. He and I were, you had to change in your uniform underneath the stage at, I think it was Indianapolis Fairground Track, to 1 mile. And we're down there changing clothes, and I was driving a car from Chicago, and they came out and they started my car with one battery. They went over and started Jeff Gordon's car with a four-pack battery on the front, and that thing sounded real heavy. I think he had to run 333 cubic inch motor or something like that. And I said to Jeff, I said, "Man, your car sounds a little stout." He said, that's the 410 that they put in there. But it was funny. I was out there. I was going down the back straightaway. I was going down the back straightaway just with everything I got with this car. And it was, you know, very nice people I was driving for. And I was going as fast as I could go. And here comes Rich Vogler. He was driving a V6 at the time and passed me right down the back straightaway. I finished second to him in a heat race there that we had. And I was like, man, I was doing everything I could, not spinning a wheel, and there he goes by in a V6. So it was, you know, it's been fun. Racing has been fun. I still enjoy it. It's still a family sport for the Lynches. I've raised boys at the racetrack, and still work a full-time job, and it's not heard of very much. You still have guys out east out there, Williams Grove and Tillings Grove area, that do it. You still have guys in Ohio that stay in the Ohio circuit and still work full-time jobs and do it. So it still can be done, but traveling as much as I do, you don't hear of that very much. But that's, I tell my guys in construction, that's my golf. Racing is my golf.
I've never heard it put that way. That's pretty interesting. We're chatting with Ed Lynch Jr. Now, speaking of the Indiana State Fairgrounds, as our folks have come to know, through the great relationship that's now being forged once again between USAC and the IZOD IndyCar Series, they're working to do a lot more grassroots. So last year, here comes Jack Hewitt with his non-wing sprint car ride, and I get to go out around the Indiana State Fairgrounds with Jack Hewitt, which was an absolute blast. But I understand that your mom got a two-seater ride, but you weren't the driver. How did that happen?
Yes, she got talked into getting in a two-seater ride with Dave Blaney. And David has been a longtime friend. Lou Blaney and my dad had many, many races together. So we were kids that grew up at the track together, you know, watching our dads, and then we became drivers, and David and Dale. But my mom got a ride with David, and boy, to hear her explain it, you feel like you're in the car, kind of like you were saying. You'll never forget that experience.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. So is there any possibility, before you decide to officially hang it up somewhere down the road, that you might be able to give your mom a two-seater ride with your, you as a driver? or will she get
in
the car?
She trusted David. I don't know if she'll trust me. But, yeah. I think that was her one and done. She loved it. She loved that memory, and she liked who she was in the car with. And it's a really thrill, you know, for anybody as you got to find out firsthand that now you can relate a lot, much, much better.
Oh, yeah, that is for sure. And the one thing about moms, and I think your mom might be a little bit different than other moms. I think your mom, from what I can recall from seeing her in the pits at the different places that we were at, she's watching a race. She's very into it. My mom came to watch me run a go-kart race on a quarter-mile asphalt track, and she couldn't watch, and there was four of us in a media race for 10 laps, and we weren't doing but 30 miles an hour, your mom there with your dad and with you, how intense is she back in the day and still is? Is she still into watching every lap of where you're at on the track and what you're doing?
Oh, my mother is my biggest critic, and she's the hardest one on me, and kind of like in an owner's way, not in a mother's way. I mean, yes, she doesn't want me to do stupid things. She doesn't want me to, she always wants me to do autographs and things like that, and to be, as good a carrier of the sport as anybody. And, but she watches the race. She knows, she'll say, boy, it looks like your tires weren't even touching the track, or, boy, you couldn't go anywhere. You tried this way or that way. Or if I won the race and stuff, and she's like, well, what took you so long to get to there? So she does watch it. She watches all the races, and, she's respected in late models and in sprints and many forms of racing. And she's had even AMA motorcycle races at her tracks and monster truck races and things like that. So she has been involved in racing many different forms, and anybody that knows her, you can light up and have a conversation with her about any form of racing, and she has a story for you.
Well, we had a conversation right the other day. I think we went about an hour plus and talking and bringing back some old memories, having grown up at Flemington, and she knew my late mentor, Bill Singer, and his late wife, Pat Singer, and those great days. That's one of the things that I do miss, as we were talking earlier here with Ed Lynch Jr. You don't have the tracks opening as early as they used to. Now it's maybe 90 minutes before the first hot lap session. You don't have the weekly autograph sessions. The internet has basically led to the demise of the majority of racetracks having a weekly program. So, as you were saying, what World Racing Group said, the average age is 41. So what do we have to do? Do we have to get back to the autograph sessions? Do we have to, as you were saying, get these kids involved in some kind of mechanical school? Do we go to the local high schools and try to work something out with their Votex and get race cars there to help them learn, like they're doing at the University of Northern Ohio with that school? Do we have to do those things if we're going to get younger and younger kids to come in, to lower the age down quite a bit to keep the sport flourishing as we would like to see it?
Well, you're talking to a son of my mother, who has been a promoter, an owner's rep, a sanctioning body, vice president, things like that. And she was also the first woman back in the 60s allowed in the pits, to get the younger generation involved, she was one of the leaders of getting kids allowed to be in the pits. We have sprint cars, we have shutdown areas, so it's the same to her and to me, is the same as drag racing. There's baby strollers in the drag racing pits, and that's where the most excitement is. When there's nothing worse, and anybody can relate to it that has a family, if you go to and I love Eldora, but if you go to Eldora, the family has to go in the grandstands, and they have to sit there, whether it's cold, rainy, snowy, or 100 degrees, they have to go sit there and be there the entire time until after the race, And, boy, you want to talk about a crabby drive home after one of those. somebody's pretty crabby after that. But what I'm saying is, yes, we do have to influence the younger generation into it. We do have to do all, the university, Northern Ohio University deal, that's perfect. We have to do more like this, but we have a problem. We have owners of tracks and sanctioning bodies that think that they have to make money every time they open the gate. Well, the guys bringing the race cars there and stuff, they aren't going to make money every time they unload. It's a gamble for them. It's a gamble for the others. There's nothing more that I hate than when you go to a racetrack that steals sponsors off of competitors, off of the race cars. Put a sign up on my racetrack, because if your driver, wrecks into somebody else, that's a hated sponsor. Well, geez, oh man, what are you doing? Go out and find your own sponsors, find your own stuff. So that's a touchy subject on my deal there, where people, this nowadays thing, when people had a racetrack 20 years ago, it's because they loved it. Tony Stewart, when he bought Eldora, yes, he wanted to make money, but was he going to make money every time? No. But when there was a big show, he was going to make money. But what's he doing to try to make it work? He lowered the ticket prices. I think it was last year. I think he came out with a press release. He said he lowered ticket prices on his regular deals, and he some of the food was too expensive, so he lowered it down. The price of gas was too much to get there. The other thing, you try to do is people only want to be entertained like 2.5 hours. So I try to tell my people that ask me, I try to tell them, entertain the people for 2.5 hours and let them go home and talk about it and get ready for the next one. Or like if there's a potential sponsor that comes to a race, they like to come see the race and be able to stop on the way home and get a bite to eat, or if they want a beverage or something, they can have that and still go home, But nowadays, we seem to want to get 6 or 7 divisions at a track, do a heat race at 7:30, and then you don't get back to the A main until like 12:30. So it kind of drags it out, and people that come are like, geez, this is all night long, and I'm dirty, and I can't stop and get a hamburger on the way home, so I'm like, it's not as much fun as when you go to the circus, or you go to a movie, or you go to a baseball game, Major League Baseball game, or a football game, or anything else. It's 2.5-3 hours, that's it.
Yeah, no, and I agree. Even if you had a 3-hour deal, that's enough. I mean, if like locally here at Sealands Grove, it's still $10 to get in for a 4-division show. You're not going to find any kind of entertainment like that throughout the area. So, but I still think give them their money's worth. If you have them there for 3-3.5 hours, that's fine. 6 and 7 divisions, yeah, I think that's starting to really push it to the point where you have your diehard fans, but like you said, you're going home and you want to get a hamburger in most places, unless because I know when I travel out to Mercer to do a webcast out there with those fine folks, there's not too many places to stop on 80 from Mercer for a long time. So,
where I'm geographically located with my race team, for a local deal, they don't pay very well. I'll say that publicly. I'm very boisterous about that. They paid the same as when my dad ran there, So it's they're, nice facilities. They try, but it's just you can't do it anymore. You're not going to bring on another. There's just no chance of breaking even. So you can't do it.
Yeah, and I think the thing too, Ed, is that people forget, you guys unload, and if you were to win, $1,200 for a feature, if you don't win that night, and you're still going to basically be in the hole, because you still have to at some point refresh the 410, and if you have different parts of change, or you got to buy tires, it is a losing proposition. Yeah, it'd be nice to see everybody get paid higher amounts throughout the country.
It's really hard whenever you see big crowds and standing room only crowds, and and you have over 100 cars in the pits mm-hmm. that all paid top dollar and their pit passes and all that stuff. And I mean, it's dollars and cents, and anybody can add it up anymore, you know. So it is, you know, it's $5 for a fish sandwich and stuff like that, you know. It's
true.
Like, you know, where are we going here, you know, and then the candy for the kids and stuff like that, you know. I'm all, you know, I brought some attorneys to the track. Actually, my dad brought some attorneys to the track from Nebraska. And it was a construction deal, and they'd never been to a race. And and we walk up to the pit thing, and they say, well, what are you doing? You're getting out. What are you doing? They said, well, you got to pay for a pit pass to get in. They said, well, you're the competitor. If you don't go, there's no show. they just couldn't understand that. Why do you have to pay when you're the show?
Right.
You know, it's kind of like Ben Roethlisberger with the Steelers. You got to pay to go into the stadium. I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know? But anyhow, it's a different situation. There are tracks, and I do appreciate it when we go to like the Knoxville Nationals. I think it's $10 to get in. You know, when you're there, you got five passes per car. It's like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. Some tracks I've been to, the owner and driver get in free. I think that's very appreciative. You know, little things like that. That's not going to break the bank on anybody, but it's just appreciated. You know, it's very much appreciated.
Well, I think the word thank you in society today is completely lost. I think that's the biggest thing that we're missing is the promoters saying thank you back to the fans. And, you know, if it does cost you $25 for a pit pass to get in, is it too much to ask a promoter to eat $50 and have two drivers come out on a night and sign autographs, and for them coming down early, especially on a Friday night, such as, you know, like Lernerville? It's hard for guys to get off, but if they do come down and they sign autographs early at a special session and it's promoted through radio and newspaper ads, there has to be a return for the promoters at some point. But my question is that too much to ask a promoter to eat $50 to have two drivers come in for the evening and sign autographs and have their cars on display for kids?
Well, I think, you know, there are sometimes, like, there'd be a Cub Scout group or something or a baseball team group, and they'd ask me to bring my car up and do that. Sure, I'd do it, you know, and I do it all the time. I take my car to schools. I take, you know, who is I'm helping out the sport, but who gets it in their pocket? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's the local track that I'm going to. So, I, you know, it's just the back and forth hasn't been. It's been more. They want to put it in their own pockets first. And in this deal, when you had Jack Gunn, Don Martin, stuff like that, it was the little things, the appreciations that you took care of the competitors, because it's like I said, these attorneys from Nebraska said.
Yeah.
If you don't go, there's no show.
That
would
be an eye-opening experience for them.
Yeah, but, you know, so I think it has to be a give-and-take thing. And when a promoter is taking a bath, I think the competitors have to help out also. You know, hey, we got to promote this better. We got to do this better. We got to make better racing. Let's do this, do that. If the promoter is reaping in the profits, then they should be sharing it with the competitors to a point. You know, everybody needs to, it's a business, okay? But we're doing it for love. It's not just a business, but we're closing the track. You have to love it, or you wouldn't be in it in the first place. People like us, you, me, my family, people I surround myself with, yes, we are addicted to racing.
My father likes to remind me I have a very expensive hobby.
Yeah.
I remind him that it was his brother who got the family back in the late 40s and 50s into the racing business. So yeah, I'm just carrying on the family tradition. Speaking of family tradition, you race against the Blaneys and a lot of other great folks out in western Pennsylvania. You race against the best of the best at Knoxville and here in central Pennsylvania. In your opinion, Ed, who was the toughest sprint car driver you ever raced against?
That goes a long way.
I'll tell you what. I'll give you. How about the top five toughest sprint car drivers you've ever raced against?
Well, that's good. I even raced with Kenny Welch, but Steve Kinzer, naturally he's the king. You know, Sammy Swindell. You have Keith Coffin from out there. You know, you have Fred Raymer. You have all these guys that are the top of the top. Who's the toughest? You know, I race against guys from California, and I race against guys nowadays. You know, Donnie Schatz and Joey Saldana, and I raced with Joey's father. We had some big races. Joe Saldana, he and I, we'd race hard. He used to come over to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania Motor Speedway, and we'd race there on Saturday nights, and we had some fierce battles. It's tough. These guys, I do categorize them, those who work on their cars and those who just carry a helmet, so I have two categories of drivers and respect that I've earned, from them, and they've earned from me. So that's what I you can tell that I always liked somebody that could build the car and race the car. And to me, that's the ultimate all-round driver that there is. So, but that's because of the way I was raised and the only way you could do it. It was the only way you could do it. In construction, a lot of times I would get home from school before I raced and before I could even drive. I would get the race cars loaded, get them on the trailer and everything, and have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich waiting on the seat of the truck for when my dad got home from work and we were off to the races, So couple times I didn't get the cars actually on the trailer. They were stuck halfway, and then by the time they got there, they'd have to put me on. But that was, that's how bad you wanted it. And that's for anybody that wants something in life. And I wanted to succeed in racing. I wanted to win. I wanted to do all that. And that's what you have to have. You have to have that drive to do it and understand the racing. Tim Schaefer, he works on his cars and does the stuff, So there's a lot of people that understand the racing and a lot of people just drive. So
is there one track and or one division that you hadn't run in yet or raced at yet that you would like to before somewhere down the road you finally say you've had enough and let the next generation of Lynches come along?
Well, I think I've raced at 59 different tracks. We just did that for somebody. I think we were in a Hall of Fame or something, and we raced at 59 tracks. So my boys are hard at it. They're looking for a new track to go to. I think they're talking about maybe that Ironman deal before we go to Knoxville or something like that, do that. So 60 racetrack, the 60th racetrack. I don't know which one will be my favorite racetracks. I mean, you have the tracks that have so much history, the Williams Grove, the Eldora, the Terre Haute, the tracks everywhere that, I never got to race at Chico or Ascot or something like that, but the Knoxvilles, to me, if you don't see me at the Knoxville Nationals, that means I did hang it up. But now the Charlotte is a very rich, very racy, good, huge, facility, very nice. So it's tough to pass those up, and I'm sure there's other tracks I haven't been to yet that are very nice that I haven't been to and race at. But I guess your best racetracks are the ones that I always tell my guys, some of the tracks I go to, I just lean my head going into the turn. That's about how good the car feels, and that's what I know what you'd feel like, you know. But sometimes you go to some of the other tracks and you never can hit that. You never can get that feeling. I never forget when Doug Wolfgang used to tell me, he said, don't need dynos. He said, take your engine to Williams Grove, and if you come out of turn two and pass two cars down the back straightaway, you've got a good engine.
That's great. That is great. And on that note, we're going to say thank you to Ed Lynch Jr. for joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. And real quickly, Ed, when is the season? I know it's only about 26 races scheduled for you this year. What's the first race of the season for you?
Well, there's going to be an all-star race at Mercer, Pennsylvania. It's only 2 hours away from us, so we'll do an all-star race there. And then on May 25th, we'll be at Charlotte for the World of Outlaw race there at Charlotte. So those are the two we're looking at. And I don't know if we'll get a practice in then or if we'll do a local one before that, but that's our schedule right now. But then in June, July, and August, that's when we're really going to hit it. But right now, that's the way we have it set up.
Well, we look forward to seeing you out on the track, and I'm sure I'll be getting a phone call from your mom critiquing the interview here.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't mind, so I'm looking forward to that. Listen, Ed, it's been great. I've greatly appreciate and thank you for sharing some great stories here with our fans here on the Sprint Car Show, and continue best of success for you guys as the next generation of Lynch kids gets ready to head out to the racetrack at some point in the future.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate it. And it takes people like you to keep this all going, keep us all in check.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate that. The Apollo Rocket, Ed Lynch Jr. joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. Folks, when we come back, we're heading out to the West Coast. We finally tracked him down. We have him locked in. Yes, the one, the only, they call him Super Ricky Gaunt. You thought Ed was fun. I'm telling you, folks, we have another 45-plus minutes of our show coming. And if you know anything about Ricky Gaunt, you know the stories will be long, but they'll be good. So stick around. We'll talk with Super Ricky Gaunt of the California non-wing sprint car fame coming up next. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show on the DirtTrackChannel.com. At Rod End Supply, they have the unique opportunity to be involved with all sorts of auto racing and performance-related industries, including farming equipment. Whether you're running a go-kart, micro sprint, midget, modified, late model, sprint car, or a tractor, Rod End Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performing at your maximum potential. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively with prompt and courteous service. Their promise is to continue to provide superior service with superior products that will keep you in front of your field. To learn more, log on to rodendsupply.com or call Bob Douglas and his staff at 1-800-284-2902. That's 1-800-284-2902. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
Hi, this is Logan Schuhart. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show, ladies and gentlemen. We have a real treat for you right now. We're heading out to the West Coast. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Katie Barthador, the only guy whose mother roots for Corey Kruseman, his father roots for Mike Kirby, and we're not sure if he even has any love from Danita's Dirty Divas, the one and the only Super Ricky Gaunt.
I might not have any love from Dirty Danita, but David Carty has a man crush on me, I think.
Folks, that's going to be like this for the next half hour, so sit back, enjoy your favorite beverage, and get ready to laugh a lot as we bring in Ricky Gaunt here joining us. It's about darn time you hooked up and said hello.
Well, you keep telling me you're going to call me, but being I don't win races anymore and never was really very good, you seem to forget me.
I even get no love for your brother. I mean, the chief of police, I left him a message. No phone call return. What's going on there?
He has no sense of humor.
I mean, do I have to send him a Joey Donut Book Club of the Month deal or something to get his attention?
The problem is, then you'd be getting calls from the whole department.
One time, just for the fun of it, and I don't know how I could pull it off without getting my head handed to me, but as you know, I do the Cop Fire charity baseball game every year in the New York City for the FDNY and NYPD for their Widow and Children's Fund. I would love to send a couple dozen boxes of Boston Cream Dunkin' Donuts to the room beforehand and blame it on some poor kid who's a rookie on the cop team.
Hey, let me tell you something about the cop fireman deal.
Go ahead.
My license plate frame on my pickup truck says God made police so firemen could have heroes. So you know who I'm rooting for, right?
Yeah, I know who you're rooting for, but let me remind you that the Fire Department of New York is the current World Fire and Police Gold Medal Champion. So we have that going for us this year, even though we have a much smaller pool of players to choose from in the Fire Department of New York. We have that reigning world championship. So
that's just because the police department hasn't sent their best yet. They don't want to just send their best right off the bat. We're going to work our way up to it.
Since when did this turn into a baseball talk show? Welcome back with Ricky Gunn. I'm Sean Wood, and it's Ball 4. We'll take your phone calls next year on Ball 4, your weekly baseball show here on the Dirt Track Channel.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Ricky, we've heard you've been doing a lot of different things with racing. You also have dabbled in the off-road scene. And I heard you had one monster flip some time ago. Allegedly, the cowboy Tony Jones saying it was about a 2-mile flip, probably one of the most spectacular, never before seen. Not even Evel Knievel could have duplicated what you did. What the heck happened?
Yeah, well, it was. It got me fired from my off-road car for a little while. Smiley finally had enough of me, and Tony he said, You gotta take a time out, mister. But me and my co-driver, we were going down a pretty good clip down a road, and it was really dusty. And so you get on the GPS, and your co-driver says, "Ah, yeah, you're going straight. You're good." And evidently, we were doing about 118, and we couldn't see, and something jumped out in front of us, and there was no saving that one. So we flipped our asses off down through the desert, and helicopter landed to make sure we were alive, and I told the guy to go get help. Let's turn this thing back over, and we actually raced for another 120 miles, but I didn't have any power steering, and it looked like the whole steering rack was going to get ripped off the car, and so they said that's enough. Call it a day.
So you're trying to tell me that Wild E. Coyote was chasing the Roadrunner, and it popped out, and next thing you know, you're flipping for 2 miles. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
If you haven't watched Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner do their thing, you know how it generally ends for the coyote. Well, that's what happened to me. Okay, so enough said, right?
Does that mean you're bouncing up and down with the accordion sound effect?
That means my Acme rocket blew up. It didn't work real well for catching somebody, so it didn't work.
Well, what was that like? I mean, you know, you're used to going in circles, turning left to go right. Now you're flying through the desert at 500 miles an hour. What can you compare about the two between circle track racing and off-road racing, if anything?
Honestly, it's not scary.
Sprint car racing is?
I mean, honest to God, yeah, you don't have a 20-year-old kid on the inside of you and a 20-year-old kid going around you on the outside. And, you know, it's like, look, man, there's miles and miles and miles of open desert. So generally when you screw up, it all falls on you. But I was giggling because when we were done flipping, I got out of the car. And my co-driver, he was out laying in the middle of the desert, and I thought he thought he was dying. You know, he couldn't breathe. And I said, "What the hell? That was a little old sissy flip. That was nothing. Come on, get up."
Sissy
no big
flip.
Deal. Shit, Tony Jones, it wouldn't even he probably would have never even unbuckled. He'd say, "Just roll this bitch back over. Let's go." Jones is tough.
I know. I almost sent him over to your house to have you call me, but he was afraid you'd shoot him if he intruded at 3 a.m.
Well, he's always over here sniffing at my door cracks trying to get a hold of my old lady. So, yeah, I will shoot his ass. Keep Jones away from my house.
Like I said, folks, you never know what's going to happen when Ricky Gunn comes on, the Super One himself. Go ahead.
Have you talked to Jones lately? Have you heard what this guy's doing now?
No, we hadn't had him on in a while. Matter of fact, I was trying to get Kruseman on and a couple other guys. We've had Nick Foss and Mike Spencer, and but we haven't had Jones on in a while.
So you've had all the good guys, and now you're working on the old guys. Now you're going to work on the old guys. So you got Gaunt, you're going to get Jones, Kruseman's going to pop up.
Well, trying to get a hold of Kruseman's like trying to get a hold of you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He thinks he's too big for his britches now, Kruseman is.
Never. Not Corey.
He thinks he's a hot shot. I'm not impressed. I'll still whip his ass. Not right. In the race car, but out of the race car. How's that?
Yeah, Rocky.
Yeah.
All right, so what did Mr. Jones do?
So Jones goes and retires again.
Again?
And now, again, I think it's like the in vogue thing to do.
Right.
He goes and retires again, and now he's a crew chief,
well,
right?
I knew that part.
Yeah, he's a crew chief working on Larry Henry's car.
Right.
And he got him some young kid, and he's going to go out there and, you know. And so now I figure if that's what, you know, Kruseman has his school deal, and he's got these kids, and he develops them. So, you know what? I'm going to do the same thing.
Oh, no.
So, there I am. No, really. It seems like the good thing to do. Jeff Walker used to be a driver. All these guys used to be drivers. Bubby. And then they get these kids. Well, I got my eye on this kid. I've been watching him for a little while now. And I made a deal. I called him up 2 weeks ago. And I said, well, listen, I want to do a driver development thing. And I think that with your talent, and because I think I'm a better mechanic than a driver, which ain't saying much.
True.
That being said, I got this kid in mind, and I think we're going to go out and beat all those guys' butts.
And who is this kid?
I don't know if you've heard of him. His name's Danny Sheridan. Young kid. Young kid.
I took the bait in that one, folks.
He's got a lot of promise and potential. So I talked to him about it, and he's all in. He's all in, and we're going to debut. We're going to give them just a little taste of what they're going to get at the end of this season. We're putting all the stuff together now. We're going to give them a little taste of what these guys are going to get, and then next year we're going to hit them pretty hard. We're going to hit them right between the eyes.
Showtime and Super. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, and I called Jones immediately, and I told him what I was doing, and he said I was cheating, getting Sheridan. But look it. I want to win.
Well, I know that, but...
Yeah, and Sheridan, he's still not scared. He's not scared yet. He'll still mash the shit out of the pedal. So he was my pick, and Jones and Kruseman got their picks first. They just didn't know, like when we play golf, as long as you go first and then you let me write down my score, I am always going to beat you.
Yeah. Oh, so what's the name of the racing team going to be then?
You know, probably... They got the movie out. I'm a big Three Stooges fan.
Right. Same here.
So between me, Danny, and I might get the gas man back out to help work on the car. We might call it Three Stooges Racing.
There you go.
Yeah.
So who's Mo?
Well, Mo probably, that'd be Gas Man. His haircut's a little bit like Mo's. And then I've got to be Curly because I'm the fattest one.
Sweet.
And then. Yeah, and then we'll put, then Danny will be Larry. That's all that's left.
And Jones could be Shep.
No, Jones ain't on our team.
I know that, but he could
he's
be
not,
still,
he's not,
he
on, he's not
be
on
Shep.
Our team. Yeah, he's not on our team. We're not letting him on our team.
Now you're starting to sound like the reindeer coach from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
That's right. That's right. We ain't going to let him play.
Like I said, folks, you never know what's going to happen when Ricky Gaunt calls.
I got a plan.
Now, we do need to get down to some serious business here. You actually do have some sprint car rides that you want to tell us about, including, which I'm sure the fans of the IndianaOpenWheel.com website, the great message board out there that are listening to the broadcast, I'm sure they're going to be very interested in the last part of the details. You're going to tell us about some upcoming rides throughout the 2012 season.
where do you want me to start?
Obviously not in Indiana.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm driving for Dave Miller again. I've been running for him for the last couple of years. We don't get to race a whole lot. He's a hardworking guy. He runs his team out of his garage. He's got one race car. I'm fortunate to drive it, but he don't have a lot of money, so we really got to be smart about what we run. And he's got one engine, and he's got some good people behind him that help him out. Tom Roberts and some of the other guys that sponsor the team. But we've got that going, and then I'm going to be driving this weekend. We don't have our motor back. We blew a motor up the last Paris race that we ran. So I'm going to run a 360 sprint car over in Arizona.
Oh.
So I get to race with Charlie and Jeremy and Pelkey and all them guys.
Charles Davis Jr. Matter of fact, Charles was on the show a few weeks ago.
Charge and Charles, my brother.
Not long after that, we had our good friend Emmett Hahn on the show. And hopefully one of these days we'll get the Sprint Bandit Tour back in some form or shape or the other. But he wants to do that. Maybe we can get you to come back, race.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm ready to race again. You know, I haven't raced a whole lot in the last couple of years. I've maybe raced, I broke my neck in 2009, and I sat out the rest of 2009. And then 2010, in 2011, between those 2 years, I think we ran, less than 30 races. So, in the last 3 years, I've run like 35 races total, and it's hard to be competitive against them guys, and especially when we're underfinanced and we don't have the resources that some of the other teams have. But I'm tired of sitting home. My boys aren't racing sprint cars. They're doing the off-road thing, and I don't have to worry about concentrating on a circle track career for them. So, So I'm going to hit and miss as much as I can. And then I was, Billy Rose and I have been buddies for a long time. And his cousins kind of browbeat him into trying to put a deal together for me to go back there and run Sprint Week in one of Billy's cars. So watch out, Indiana. I mean, we might not be fast, but we got a big cooler.
Well, folks, speaking of Indiana, there are many memories that Ricky has of Indiana, but there's one. That is the tale of tales. It is the greatest story ever told. It is absolutely 100% authenticated. I have checked the records. I've done the research. This thing is so true. It's incredible. If you've never heard it before, you're in for a real treat. Tell them about the most famous rental car experience in the history of rental car of mankind.
Are you talking about the Cruiserman escapade?
There is no other one than the Cruiserman escapade.
Yes, there are others. We tore a lot of stuff up. We've raced on the wrong sides of the road and,
gone through Frances and Manzanita when they were watch in.
Me and Joe Dooling drove right into the front lobby of a hotel before.
Oh, gee.
That wasn't a rental car. That was his own personal car.
When was that?
Yeah, Joe Dooling is crazier than I am by far. I love hanging out with him because he's a fun date. But anyway, the damn Cruiserman. So I got, when we go back on tour, I like to, partake in a couple of spirits now and then. And I might have had a couple of cocktails one night. And so we go up to the hotel and go to bed. And apparently I'd left all the car doors open.
Wrong thing to do.
Forgot to shut them when we got out, So we go to sleep. So we wake up the next day and didn't know any different. I didn't realize we left the doors open. So I start the rental car up, and the thing is shaking violently and knocking and ping. I'm like, wow, what did we do last night? So we go down the road, and, it's during sprint week in Indy. So it's a little humid, and it's a little bit hot. So about noontime later that day, it starts smelling a little bit. I'm like, holy cow, somebody throw up in here or something? So we go to the liquor store and we get some of those little Christmas trees, little smelly Christmas trees, By the end of the second day, I got smelly Christmas trees around this thing like tassels in a lowrider. It smells so bad. The thing shakes violently. It's horrible. So make a long story short, what happens is one of the crew guys comes over from Cruiserman's team. He says, "Hey, Gaunt, listen, you've been driving that thing on the freeway?" I said, Yeah, how's it run? I said, "It don't run real good, man. It's like it's going to come apart." He says, "Well, check the oil."
Oh, jeez.
All right. So I check the oil, And when I pulled the dipstick, oil started kind of running out the top of the dipstick tube.
Oh, jeez.
So I was like, wow, that's kind of weird. So the guy, he says, a lot of oil in there. Yeah. He says, well, you know, when we change the oil in the race car, we had no place to put it. So we just filled the motor up with the used oil. Holy shit, man, it's going to hydraulic and blow up. Yeah, so I felt like I would lose if I got an oil change. So I went over to Jiffy Lube, and I told the guy there, I said, listen, how much just to drain the oil down to the correct level? He says, what? I said, well, listen, it's a long story, but it's got too much oil in the motor. I said, I just want to drain it down to the correct level, because then I won't feel like I, you know, like I lost this little battle of wits here. So it took him a half hour to drain the oil.
Half hour?
Yeah, that was like 50 weight oil in the thing.
Oh, jeez.
Took like a half hour for it to come out of the damn thing, to hold like 5 quarts in some little rental car. So he drains it down, you know, and then all of a sudden, it's smelling really bad. So one of my guys that was with me, under the seat, the damn cruiserman went and got a catfish from the market, and he put it up under the seat.
Catfish?
Oh my God, it stunk so freaking bad. It melted and glued itself to the carpet. And bringing the rental car back to the rental car place was a treat, because it was all beat up and banged up. The fenders were all caved in, and the bumpers were mashed in and back. And what the hell happened? I said, I don't know, man. I went to Walmart. And it came out, it was like this. Thank God I got the rental car insurance. But
Oh, Lord, you guys have rental cars.
So, you know, I did my little spiel with Cruiserman and got as even as I could. And that's a whole different story.
How'd you get even?
It's a whole nother. So it'd take a while. Donated a couple helmets, and he had no driving suit, no shoes, and no gloves, and couldn't get in the trailer. It was locked with a mysterious padlock.
Oh, only you, Ricky Gaunt. Only you.
We've had some fun.
Oh yeah. Now the other truth I'm wondering about is the Oval Nationals at the Paris Auto Speedway every year.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly, there are a number, and I do believe it's a very substantial number of rules that were implicated in the aftermath of certain things you may have been involved in with the after party, shall we say?
I get blamed for everything. I get blamed. When I pulled in this year, this is no BS. I pulled into Oval Nats this year with my motorhome, and I went over. I found a spot that was, like, out of the way. It looked quiet. And so I went to go pull over there, and the security guy, I've known him since Paris Open, he comes over in his golf cart. He's like, hey, Ricky, what? Hey. I said, what? He goes, do you plan on parking here? I said, yeah, it's a nice spot. He goes, oh, man. He says, don't park here. I said, why? He goes, these people said they specifically didn't want to park next to you. I said, are you kidding me? I said, for the last 5 years, I've been parking on the clear on the other end to get away from all these people, you know, a bunch of these jerks. I don't even want to pit by them. They're like, no, they don't want to pit by you. They don't want to park by you, you know. You're too much trouble. I said, shit.
Oh,
I ain't even been there for 2 years, right?
Right.
I didn't even race there for 2 years.
And the legend continues.
Yeah.
Of course, there was always that golf cart incident, right?
The golf cart?
Yeah, the infamous one that went into the lake, but nobody knows how it actually got there.
Well, I was wearing a life preserver because I'm not a very strong swimmer, so I don't even know what that was about.
So the boys aren't taking the sprint car route like you did. Did they talk to you about that in terms of how they approach dear old dad and say, Dad, we'd rather go off-road racing, and as a father, are you comfortable with them doing that, or would you like to have seen them follow in your footsteps and take to the sprint car ranks?
Well, on a serious note, what happened was we were dabbling in the off-road thing with them because, you know, I was doing it with Smiley and that gang and having a ball, and we love it. We really enjoy it. And so they were racing a little truck, and they came to me and my wife, and they said, you know, we want a better off-road car. I said, well, you know, Mom and Dad don't have that kind of money. You're going to have to make a decision and pick. And I hadn't even got all the words out of my mouth, and they said, sell sprint cars.
Hmm.
And I about, you know.
Yeah.
I on the outside, I remained calm, but I felt the knife squarely go between my shoulder blades. And I said, well, you want to think about it? They're like, no, sell sprint cars. We want a better off-road car. I was like, oh, God.
Wow.
So it stung, and it took me about 6 months before I finally came to terms with it. But, you know, if it's one of these sports that if you don't love it and you don't eat, sleep, and breathe it, and it's not what you think about all the time, you have no business doing it. And if that's what – you know, my boys couldn't tell you when the next sprint car race was supposed to be, but they'll tell you for the next 2 years where all the off-road races are. So – It wasn't a hard decision. It's still hard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a hard decision for them because, you know, I don't want them to be anything like me, really. I mean, they're good kids and they're smart and
that's,
you know,
definitely not like you.
Yeah, exactly. They're not mean. They're not
vindictive.
Jerks. They're just nice kids, and I want to keep them that way. So,
how old are they now, Ricky?
17 and 15.
17
and 15. They've got big milestone birthdays this year. In July and June, they'll be 18 and 16.
You're getting old.
I've been old.
Sprint car races make you old real quick. Right?
I got old, man. The gray hair will prove it.
Are they racing with any particular sanctioning body?
Mostly Best in the Desert.
Okay.
There's the two major organizations are SCORE, which mm-hmm. runs mostly down in Mexico, and then Best in the Desert, which runs primarily in Nevada, and then there's a couple races in Arizona.
So now, do you do anything with them with the truck at all, or are you just watching from the sidelines, so to speak?
Well, I don't want to drive their car. I don't want to drive their truck. Mm-hmm. This is their day in the sun. So I'm the mechanic, basically, you know. And their mama likes them, and I like their mama. So she makes me take care of them and work on their stuff and. And that's how the whole world goes round.
Well, look, I was out in a non-wing sprint car two-seater with Jack Hewitt last year, and I also was out in a two-seat Indy car ride with Al Unser Jr. at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I'd have no problem coming out and going for a ride with you in a truck sometime. No problem.
Yeah, it's fun. And then I'll bring you back in one piece.
I can see the cell phone conversation now. Jones?
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying
that
to get all those guys
three
out. We
miles.
Got, hey, we got Mike English is racing a truck now. You know, you're familiar with Mike.
Of course, yes.
We started together. We were rookies together, and Mike's out there racing, and I really enjoy hanging out with him. And at the last big race, it was the Mint 400. Rip Williams came out and was hanging out. And Mike's racing with Wiley Miller, another sprint car guy out here, and yeah, man, it's a family-orientated thing. Everybody comes out in camps and hangs out, and it's fun. It's like the old days in sprint cars, you know?
Right. Now, just out of curiosity, going back to those early days of sprint cars, what's your take now that you were away from it, unfortunately, because of the broken neck, but what's your take about the younger generation that's coming up through the sprint car ranks? Were they like you guys back in the days where you took your calculated risk, but you also worked on your race car, or are they more of just wanting to come in with the bag and race the car and not worry about as much as working on the car as you guys did back in the day?
You know, honestly, I know that my generation, the guys that I come up with, we talk about the old days and how it ain't the same anymore. It's changed. It's different. You know, we truly feel that way because we had such a camaraderie. We still enjoy being with one another. Mm-hmm. And even though, like, English is not running or if, you know, Sheridan's kind of taking some time off this year and Jones is not racing, we still keep in touch.
Mm-hmm.
We still enjoy being around one another. It's still that same feeling as it was, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. I love seeing Richard. I love, you know, I talk to Kirby at least once or twice a week. But I'm not sure that every generation hasn't said that. I'm not sure that the old guys when I was coming up didn't say, oh, these kids, you know, man, they ain't like us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure. I don't know. I think that the kids that I've seen coming up through, I know the guys that are running up front right now, like primarily you've got Spencer and Matt Mitchell and Nikki Foss. Those three is an example right off the bat. I know they all work on their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they have a real desire and a drive, and they're smart and they're talented. And then the Williams kids, I know how hard they work on their stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, I'm not going to say that. The Ryan Bernal kid, he's going to be something else.
Yeah, I see his name popping up quite a bit in that Western 360 deal with USAC.
Yeah,
he seems like he's a pretty stout runner out there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look at what Kyle Larson's doing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and a lot of these kids are second generation or third generation, mm-hmm. you know, and so they know, they've been taught, it's been passed down. So I'm not going to say that. The only thing I do believe is I know that when we raced together, when we went back for Sprint Week, mm-hmm. you know, there was a bunch of us that would go back, or when we would go with when Ronnie Schumann was doing the non-wing world championship, we really did hang out. We had a ball. I mean, we hung out in the parking lots together. We all stayed in the same hotels. We did all that stuff. I'm not sure the kids do that together as much anymore.
That's what I miss. That's what I miss about the sport is that we don't.
I think they're missing that part of it.
Yeah.
I think they're missing that part of it.
Yeah, the gates aren't open as early as they used to be. You don't see the drivers hanging out late to sign autographs.
Right.
Sometimes we're in a bit of a rush to get the show done and get it over with in 2.5 hours instead of taking your time. Three and a half hours is more than plenty for three divisions and to get their to give people their money's worth.
Yeah.
You see a lot more 5 and 6 division shows these days than, you know, back in the days when it was just 3 division shows. And sometimes just 2 divisions. But it's a shame because I think that that's something that we need to get back to is doing the autograph sessions and getting the drivers there early, but also encouraging to stay after because we really don't race here in Pennsylvania. We don't run on Sundays anymore. Penn National shut down. Susquehanna doesn't run on Sundays. So there's really nowhere for these guys to have to really go to get their cars cleaned and get them ready for the next night to go racing, outside of Speed Week, of course.
Right.
But I wish we would get back to that because I think we need to get the younger fans a lot more involved. And it was such a tragic loss when Fred Brownfield was killed. The National Sprint Tour. I thought he had a great thing going with getting those kids out onto the front stretch, picking the pill for the driver for the dash and getting an autograph hat right from that driver. I don't know if you could get anything better than an autograph hat and have the kid on the racetrack itself as a story to go back to tell his buddies about. That gets those kids talking to go back to mom and dad and get, you know, more and more people to come in.
Hey, Sean, don't you think that, you know, one of the things that I've kind of thought about is, I would say the guys I came up with, and even you know, like Tony Stewart, I use Tony Stewart and Yaley, and probably you know I don't know so much about Jeff Gordon, but Casey Kane. A lot of these guys, and the guys like you know me and Jones and Gasman and Kirby and Cruiserman. I mean, there were only a few of those guys that had aspirations of getting somewhere else.
True.
I think most of us thought we were so fortunate to get the sprint cars. God bless us and this is where we'll, you know, go our entire career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that somewhere in that point, it got to where when our guys did make it to the big leagues, then it was now just a stepping stone. It was an avenue for guys to get to the next level. And I think that's when we kind of lost that whole, that real grasp with the fans and hanging out and doing all that fun stuff because it was all a corporate. It was like, what can we do to get to that next place.
Right, and it was, and I see a lot of parents living vicariously through their kids because, honestly, we haven't seen the next Jeff Gordon in a long, long time. We haven't seen the next Tony Stewart. I mean, these guys are rare breeds, and they're very talented. And it's not like back in the day where you're in an open-wheel car, your thoughts are geared toward Indianapolis. Now it's geared toward Charlotte and how much money can we make. And
right.
You know, I've heard where if you don't have a kid under a development contract by like 5 or 6 years old, forget about it.
Right.
But yet you hear the stories of success of guys who didn't start out in go-karts. Some couple guys I've interviewed hadn't started in go-karts until they were 16 and are still successful.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, but it sounds like the boys are wanting to do what they love. And, of course, we know you love, you know, driving sprint cars. So I guess from a father's standpoint, you have to be happy that they, they have a squared head on their shoulders and that they know that's what they want to do. They're not trying to decide back and forth. They've made up their mind. So I guess, you know, from you and your wife's standpoint, you got to be pretty happy with that.
100%. Totally. You know, now and this is, like I said, it's their day in the sun. I'm going to support them as best I can. And I'm just fortunate to have so many good people that I've, you know, been involved with over all these years of racing to help me, you know. Smiley being in the off-road thing, and, you know, I'm still, you know, English. All these folks still can help. We can still kind of circle the wagons and stay together. And so, yeah, I'm lucky.
And, of course, I'm very lucky. You know, the next year, the debut of Showtime and Sherritt and Super.
Yep. And the next one, when we go to a two-car team, I'm bringing Yaley back.
You're bringing Yaley back.
I'm bringing JJ back. Yeah, because he's actually a fun date. He's kind of corporate right now.
He's a fun date.
Yeah, he's a fun date. I'm going to bring him back.
I need to get in touch with Mr. Yaley because...
He won't call you back. Well, what you need to do is you need to call, leave a message, and say what's that guy that owns Facebook? Who's that kid that owns Facebook? It's worth billions and billions. Just say, yeah, this is such and such from Facebook, and, you know, I want to sponsor a car. He'll call you right back.
Well, actually, we're going back to Belleville. This is our 10th anniversary of doing streaming audio, and Belleville is where we did our first live streaming audio. We're going back this year to broadcast the Midget Nationals, and we were there broadcasting it when he broke A.J. Foyt's record back then.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have to do a conversation with Yaley. I still have the tape from that broadcast, so we're going to have to play that back. So I'm looking forward to that as well. But, yeah, we still need to get out to the West Coast and party up with you guys and have some fun and, you know, pay Mr. Jones to be my security man, take me around the pits and everything. And, you know, last time I saw Cruzman's daughter, she was just a wee little girl making mud cakes in the pits at Lucas Oil Speedway. You know, it's been a while since I've seen all those guys. But
Come on out.
You guys need to come east, but, you know, they don't want to hear about taking off the wings here in Pennsylvania. That's you kidding me? I'd be strung up the highest tree if they heard that.
Yeah.
But those were some great races you guys had here. You had them at the Grove, down Susquehanna. You had them at Grandview. You know, sprint car racing at Grandview is just phenomenal, folks. If you haven't been there, especially the wing sprint cars, getting around in 11 seconds. But to see the non-wing boys, especially like the ARDC midgets, that's a whole lot of fun. So, well, Ricky, listen, as always, it's a pleasure when we chat. It's always a great time. We probably can go on for hours. I'm sure you got more stories to tell. And now you're going to have Cruzman call me and Jones calling me to rebut all these different types of stories. And, you know, Sheridan's going to be calling me going, what? What race team? I hadn't heard anything about that. and Scott Delosio is going to be giving me a call tomorrow and say, hey, what's the breaking news, you know?
Press release.
Hey, yeah, but you know what? You may have just given him next year's April Fool's press release joke.
Perfect.
The Three Stooges, I love it. And and Tony Jones starring as Shemp.
Perfect.
Hey, listen, hey, be safe out there when you're doing your other duties as a cop. And tell your brother, please call me. I just want to say hello and let him know what we're doing. He has to hear this. I mean, he has to hear this. And we want to thank all the fans from IndianaOpenWheel.com that come in and support the website and listen to the broadcast. I'm sure they were in tears like we were throughout the broadcast here. And, hey, all the best of you and to your boys as well. We look forward to getting together someday and doing a broadcast live and in person with you.
Perfect. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody.
The one and the only Super Ricky Gaughan once again here on the Sprint Car Show. We'll take a break and be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Jessica Zemkin. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show, everybody. Special thanks to our guest, Ricky Gaunt and Ed Lynch Jr. for joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. Now, we actually had more guests and audio from interviews that we did over the weekend. We'll have a special second edition of the Sprint Car Show coming up for you either later today or tomorrow right here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood. The Sprint Car Show has been brought to you by Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. By Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions, and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.